I'm joined by Dave Preston. I'm Noah Frank. We are going to break down the brackets this year. Interesting brackets. I want to get your opinions, Dave. We were just talking before we came on that I have not seen your analysis. You've not seen my analysis. So this will be interesting, kind of seeing where you came from and where I came from, looking at the bracket in general, kind of who got in, who didn't get in. We'll break down the local teams and sort of their outlooks, some sleepers, and our favorites to perhaps cut down the nets at the end of this thing. So before we get into to who's in the field, let's talk a little bit about who didn't make the field. We both have a stake in this, so I know your boys didn't make it. How did you feel about Syracuse being left out?
I thought at 18 and 14 they didn't deserve to make the field. I thought last year at 19 and 13, I think they lost 5 of 7 down the stretch. They made the field. I was surprised to see that. This year they went 2-11 away from the Carrier Dome. They lost to a really bad St. John's team by 33. They lost to a team in Georgetown that turned out to be bad. They lost to UConn, who had a losing record. And they lost to a Boston College squad that has one other ACC win to their credit, not just this year, but the last 2 years. I thought they needed to win one or two more games. Going into the ACC season, I thought they needed to win 12. I thought they needed to get to 20 to have a shot. They didn't win an ACC tournament game. And every year the criteria changes slightly here and there. This year I didn't think they deserved to make it because they didn't pile up enough quality wins and didn't limit the bad losses.
I'm a Cal fan, and Cal kind of did the opposite. They beat everybody they were supposed to beat. Their worst loss was San Diego State, which is not a bad team. And they just could not win any of the signature games. They lost twice to Arizona, where they were within a possession in the final minute. They got just barely beaten by Virginia. They lost a heartbreaker where they got buzzer beated by Oregon. Like, every time they had a chance to win a marquee game, they failed. Actually won a couple conference tournament games, but I didn't think they deserved to get in either, because the 21-12, with really zero marquee wins. Their best win basically was USC, which snuck in on the bubble instead of them.
I think what kind of makes the bubble case odd from year to year is the fact that teams play more games now. Used to play 26, 27, 28 games before the conference tournaments. Now everybody's up around 31. So you have a team that wins 21 games like Cal, or you have a Richmond that is in that 20-win area, and you wonder, why didn't we get in? We won our 20. Well, two of those games are potentially against major scrubs, against Division III schools. So in reality, you may have two or three fewer wins to your credit than what there's win inflation, just like grade inflation.
So for me, my biggest snub, you were talking about, you know, win inflation. You win 27 games, and you know, you're against a team that we'll get to in a bit that is probably the most underseeded team in the tournament in your conference. Illinois State, I thought, got squeezed for what seemed like not that strong of a bubble. I mean, there were, you know, we're talking about these teams that have a lot of faults. You go 27-6, make your conference final in a mid-major that has traditionally had more than one team and on several occasions. I was surprised they didn't get in. Do you have a pick for biggest snub?
I thought they should. I thought they were a team that should have made the field. Every year they say the bubble is soft or the bubble is weak, and every year it's weaker and softer seemingly than it was the previous season. Illinois State did everything that was asked of them. They played well out of conference. They played well in conference. They beat Wichita State once. The only team they could not beat down the stretch was Wichita State. They've won 30 games, and Wichita State has been a very good team over the years in the tournament and the like. Granted, we're only looking at this year's snapshot, so to speak, but I thought 27-6 from the Missouri Valley Conference, that should get you into the tournament field. I was surprised that they did not make the field.
So, and I think if there's one takeaway that I got when I first looked at the bracket, I was on a plane when everything was announced. Right. I didn't pay for the Wi-Fi. I landed, I turned on my phone, I got a bunch of text messages, I looked at the bracket, and the thing that stuck out to me the most was just sort of a general lack of respect for the mid-majors. I feel like the mid-majors, like across the board, really did not get what I considered the appropriate level of respect. And it really showed up, I think, in some of those middle seedings.
Right.
You got St. Mary's as a 7 seed. St. Mary's is a really good team.
In the top 20 for a big chunk of the year. If you're, granted, the poll isn't a direct representation as to the seeding, but that's two spots down the line right there.
Right.
As opposed to, it would be one thing if it was just one.
I thought they'd be a five seed.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about a team that has lost four games all season long, right?
Right.
And that's one of those games was to a 25-win UT Arlington team that was pretty good, won some good out-of-conference games, went down and thumped Texas, and, you know, and three games to Gonzaga. Those are their four losses, were UT Arlington early in the season and three games to Gonzaga. And they've beaten everybody else. Anyway, and they get VCU. So you get two mid-majors pitted against one another in the 7-10.
Right.
And then the other side, you get Dayton and Wichita State. And Wichita State is a 10 seed, which is just insane to me. I mean, they rank in some of the advanced sites as a top 10 or top 15 team in the country.
I thought they were much better than a 10 seed.
And for the committee to pit these four mid-majors against one another to like knock them out, why is Michigan State a 9 seed at 19-14 and Vanderbilt's a 9 seed at 19-15? Make them the 10 seeds and play these 7 seeds. Like that's what I want to see. I want to see, how do the mid-majors stack up?
Right.
Give them a chance to play against the major conference teams.
And now we'll never know.
We'll
have a major school, either Vanderbilt or Northwestern advancing, or either Wisconsin or Virginia Tech making the move to the round of 32, as opposed to seeing how the little guys would fare.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll get back to some of those teams later, kind of as we go through this. But let's look at the locals. Obviously, Maryland is sort of Maryland and Virginia are the two that maybe have a chance of making a little bit of noise. It would be a bigger upset if Virginia Tech or VCU made the second weekend. What do you see when you look? You know, Maryland, I think, draws a pretty good draw, all things considered.
Right.
In getting a 6 seed, I thought they might have been as low as an 8. They get Xavier, who's really kind of scuffled and not been very good down the stretch. They lost Edmund Sumner, who tore his ACL, was a 15-5.
Incredible player.
Yeah, and so, I mean, how do you see how that looks? They probably draw Florida State in the second round,
right,
if they advance. What do you think of Maryland's chances?
I think they have a decent chance to advance. This Xavier team, they started off, they were a top 20 team for the bulk of their early conference part. They lose Sumner, and then they hit the skids. They've won 4 games since February 5th. 3 of those victories have come against DePaul. And usually I preface DePaul by saying lowly DePaul. Once again, this is not... 3 of their 4 wins came against the worst team in the Big East.
Arguably the worst team in major conference basketball.
Boston College would give them a run for their money. A backwards run, as Faye would have it. I think if there's one concern, if you're Maryland, Xavier's the second best rebounding team in the Big East, and that's a very good team underneath. And that's one concern that you might have, because you don't know what you're going to get from DeMonte Dodd over a 40-minute stretch. You might get decent numbers, or you might get what was he thinking kind of thing. Melo Trimble's got to get back on the saddle. Hopefully, for Maryland, they will use this to kind of set a reset, a reboot to the season. The freshmen will be recharged. They played well for, 30 minutes against Northwestern, and then things just came crashing down against the Wildcats. They need a full 40 minutes to get past Xavier. Florida State, I'm not too confident about, because it is down in Orlando. The Seminoles are a very good team. They've got that Bacon kid, too.
Yeah, Florida State's really good. People were talking, I think they still have memories of FGCU knocking off Georgetown.
Yeah.
And that was not the same FGCU, and this Florida State team is not that Georgetown team.
Sometimes all you need, though, is that memory. I covered Ball State back in the 90s, and they had that run with Paris McCurdy in the early 90s. They got to the Sweet 16, and every time they made the tournament after that, they got the A game from whomever they were playing, because they knew that they were a Cinderella once, and let's not do this again.
It'll be interesting. I mean, you'll probably have some Florida fans
down
there who are going to be rooting against Florida
Hands
State.
Down.
I mean, they may have actually gotten sort of a bad draw in terms of being like a relative home game. But if they get through that, it'll basically be a home game against Maryland. If Maryland gets through, I have the sense that's going to be a tough way. It's a tough advance for Maryland to get to the Sweet 16.
And if they do, they'll likely face an Arizona team that their head coach almost came to Maryland. So these selections, of course, by the committee are completely random brackets. Nothing to do with storylines.
Right. We'll get to who they might face, because I have some thoughts about that down the road. But let's look at Virginia, which is a team that you know, they've been inconsistent, and their offense has really been the issue. They sometimes just dry up and can't score points. But their defense is always great. It keeps them in games. It gives them a chance. And when they do perform on all facets, they can hang with anybody in the country. How do you like their draw? They get UNC Wilmington, a 29-win team, you know, mid-major team in the first round. Looking ahead, they've got Florida and Villanova and Duke. I mean, that's a tough region that they got stuck in.
It's a rough draw, especially when you can't generate points. I made the observation a couple weeks ago that UVA looked like London Parentes and four guys from the Y. While there are guys on this team, Wilkins can produce. There's a couple other guys who have come up. Kyle Guy, the dude with the man bun. Nobody has really developed as a consistent second scoring option. And London Parentes isn't a scorer. He's a distributor. He's had to take a lot of that on his plate this winter. UNCW ranks 10th in the nation in scoring. So Virginia cannot get into a track meet with this team. If they do, it's going to be a quick exit. Jack Salt is not awesome. The New Zealander center is 6'10", and he is not a scorer. They need a consistent effort from him, and he's not given him one at all this season. If they somehow get to face Florida, that's going to be a tough draw, because from what I understand, Orlando, Florida is in the same state as Gainesville, which is where the University of Florida just happens to reside.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough draw for them. It's interesting you mentioned, you know, Wilmington being a high-scoring team. They don't really have any quality wins. Their best win of the year is maybe at St. Bonaventure. That's probably home.
Don't short-sight the Bonnies. Yeah, I mean, next carry over at Georgetown, their athletic communications guy will be over here.
They beat East Tennessee State. I mean, they've had a really good season, but they haven't really had a test. I'm kind of interested to see. I think that'll be a good contrast of styles, just as far as a good, interesting, kind of funky NCAA tournament game.
That's a matchup we want to see. Contrast of styles, big school, little school, as opposed to mid-majors going after it and second-tier conference schools playing to try to prove that they belong for the 15th time.
We should get a pretty good contrast, too, in Virginia Tech and Wisconsin. Those are two teams that play a very different brand of basketball. Badgers lost 6 of their last 10. Really didn't look that good down. I mean, everyone was circling them as, oh, if you can beat Wisconsin, you get your quality win. Those don't look like such good wins anymore. They're still a top 10 defensive team in the country in terms of efficiency, but you know, Virginia Tech's beaten better teams than Wisconsin. How do you think about what do you think about that?
What I don't like, if I'm Buzz Williams, is that Virginia Tech's the worst rebounding team in the ACC, and they lost their best rebounder, Chris Clark, to an ACL a month ago. While they've had a couple of weeks to kind of sort out what was already a shortened rotation, so they got maybe instead of six or seven guys that he really trusts. You've lost your best rebounder against a team with guys like Nigel Hayes, Ethan Happ, and just like Maryland has learned that you need two quality bigs if you're going to compete consistently in the Big Ten, Virginia Tech's going to learn that for 40 minutes, somebody's got to play out of his skull. I don't know if it's Zach Ledeh inside. Seth Allen has had some incredible moments in the last month or two, some great last-second shots. March is made for guards like Seth Allen, who were able to get some last-second shots. The question is, can Virginia Tech play well enough for the first 39 minutes and 30 seconds to get Seth Allen into that position?
I want to know who from the Atlantic 10 Conference got on the wrong side of the NCAA tournament committee, because when you look at the matchups that their teams drew this year, you look at VCU going to the first round. You know, VCU was a top right in the mix in that conference. They make the conference tournament final. They played a standard VCU year where they earned their way in. They beat some good other mid-major teams. They had a pretty good year, and they draw St. Mary's in the first round.
It feels like VCU, no matter what they do, good, bad, happy, sad, however they perform down the stretch, however they do in the Atlantic 10 tournament, which they've won, and I think they've been in the finals every single year since they left the CAA for the A-10, they get a 7 seed. the last couple of years, whether it's been Shaka Smart or now Will Wade. I want to say they were a 7 seed last year or something. Or
I think they were a 5 seed last. Well, they
were a 7 or a 10 a couple years ago against Ohio State.
Well, they got slipped. They got slipped by a 12 seed, I think, in a 5-12 game a couple years back. But yeah, it just
they always seem to come out and it's and you're like, okay, I really don't know how this is going to work out. We talked about contrast of styles. These are two good defensive teams, though. St. Mary's ranks second in the nation in fewest points allowed per game. VCU is known for that havoc defense. They allow points, but a lot of it is product of possessions because they're able to turn you over, because they're able to they don't necessarily stop you in the half court. They prevent you from getting into the half court. Jaquan Lewis has had some big moments this year. He had those free throws to help extend a game against St. Bonaventure, help beat George Washington in Foggy Bottom. I think the A-10 got a little bit of a rough go right there. You also look at Richmond, who won the tournament. They were an 11 seed. And they've played very well down the stretch, Rhode Island. Richmond was a school that I thought could have gotten in with another win. They didn't get it, though.
So, you know, looking through the bracket, I love finding good upset stories, and everyone looks for their sleepers, and yeah, it's a big part of this whole thing. I don't see a ton of sleepers when I look at, and I'm sure that means that the bracket will go completely haywire and there'll be 13 seeds, you know, in the Sweet 16 and all that. But when I look at it, there are not a lot of teams that pop off the page to me. Does anybody show up to you as a first round upset? Maybe even a make it to the second weekend team that isn't maybe obvious to a novice looking at the bracket.
I used to discount all the teams that those 11 seeds and 12 seeds that played in the first four, but you have seen more often than not over the last couple of years, a VCU, a Tennessee, I think Marquette won an extra round 1 year when they were an 11 or a 12. So you have, I like Wake Forest, how well they've played down the stretch. They've got that big Collins and Wynn. Boston College, granted Boston College, worst team in the ACC, Boston College basically took Collins out of the game, and the Demon Deacons were still able to produce, still able to get things done. This is a fairly young Wake Forest team under Danny Manning, and they're in that play-in game against Kansas State. Really not impressed with them. They lost by 30-something to Oklahoma. Everybody's got that bad loss, but that was theirs. And then they advance, and they play a Cincinnati team that, while the Bearcats are good, I'm not really sold on.
I'm that whole conference is probably the one that I'm the least sure about. SMU has looked really good. I mean, I see where SMU could beat Baylor and challenge Duke for an Elite Eight spot, or they could just disappear into dust, and them and Cincinnati are the top two teams, you know, coming out of the American. I have no sense of that conference for some reason.
Well, because it's in the phantom zone of leagues, because it's not the big, and it has a mishmash. It's like a hot dog of different teams from different conferences, and sometimes the hot dog is good. UConn, as an AAC team, won the national championship a few years ago. SMU, I think, was one of the last teams to get into the field. They got to the Sweet 16 from being able to, you know, come out of the bottom of the bracket. So, but I'm not sold on Cincinnati, though.
Yeah. Well, so the only team that I look at that I think maybe, you know, double digit seed wise that could surprise some people and maybe make some noise is Middle Tennessee. And people probably, if they remember their tournament history
last year,
Michigan State went in as a not a prohibitive favorite, but one of the favorites to win the whole thing, and got slipped in the first round by the Blue Raiders. And they play a Minnesota team that is very inexperienced. Really, I mean, a Minnesota team that has not been there, does not have that kind of. I mean, they've got more tournament experience than Richard Pitino's club does.
Yeah.
And then they get probably Butler in the second round, and Butler's they've been uneven, you know, and. To me, that stands out as a possible team that could go and make the second weekend of the double digit seeds, maybe the easiest draw, just because there's so many teams like, you know, Wichita State that's just a bad draw. It's they would be a great, you know, a double digit seed to go somewhere, except they got to play Dayton and then probably Kentucky, and like, good luck. I mean, Kentucky is one of the best teams. You know, they might be underseeded as a two.
And Minnesota's a team that's getting to the big dance for the first time, and they won 8 games last year. If they'd even gone 500 this year, it would have been a victory. This year's team, even though they, you know, they did advance to the Final Four of the Big Ten last Saturday, you might think that they might overlook a Middle Tennessee, but this is a team that's probably better than they were last year as far as what they have coming back. And last year, they had the game of their lives against Michigan State. Michigan State didn't play that poorly. They didn't have their best game. They just didn't have as good as an A game of Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah. The other team that we've talked about them already, but that I think could maybe make some noise is St. Mary's. They've got, you know, I think they're better than VCU, and Arizona, as well coached as they are, that is not the Arizona team of the last few years. They graduated a ton of guys. They scraped out a lot of wins this year, and you need to be able to scrape out wins, but they're just not that talented. They outplayed teams in the Pac-12 tournament, but I don't see that Arizona team going anywhere this year. I don't think that it's that unit that we've seen, you know, sort of chug their way through the tournament. And if St. Mary's can beat Arizona, that next round, that Sweet 16 game is in San Jose, California. They get Florida State or whoever comes out, you know, of Maryland's little pod. It has to go all the way to San Jose, where they will have a huge home court advantage. If they get to the Sweet 16, I see them getting to the Elite Eight. And I mean, that's
would they play Gonzaga? Is this the year that Gonzaga finally gets to the Final Four?
Well, it's funny that they put them in the same region. I actually like West Virginia a lot. I love what the sort of development that you've seen out of Bob Huggins, the way that team now plays like VCU. I mean, they press and they just lock you down and turn you over and frustrate you, but they can still score. I mean, they've got good talent on that team, and defense always plays. You know, you get tired legs on the second of these, whether it's the Friday, Sunday, or Thursday, Saturday. Those second games, that's when shooting teams fall apart. And if you play good defense, just like VCU did back in 2011, you have a chance to make a run.
Huggins' most recent Final Four team with West Virginia was an interesting combination of John Beilein's players playing his style. So you had a pressing team, a tough defensive team that could also rain threes. This year's team is a little, they have a better foundation. They're not living and dying by the three as much. Played in a very tough Big 12 that has them battle tested. Unfortunately, they're not playing Kansas because he always gets his team up to play Kansas ridiculously well, and then somehow he finds a way to lose to a Bucknell, which they draw in the first round this year.
Well, so speaking of Kansas, we'll get to some favorites here. I think they've got the most wide open path when I look at the one seeds, the least resistance probably coming out of that region, at least. I mean, really kind of all the way. I feel like the 2-3-4 is the weakest in that region of any of them, having Louisville, which has flaws, you know, can disappear on offense. Oregon, which I think is a little 2-3 reliant, although Dylan Brooks is the kind of guy that you want on your team in March. I think Iowa State probably knocks off Purdue. That's probably who they run into, which could be a problem for them. But you know, a familiar conference foe. Who do you think is there anything that stands out to you? Anybody who you definitely ran straight through the Final Four as a favorite?
You know, it's tough because you do like 7 sheets over the first, and you just try to get a rhythm of everything. And so on. You can like Louisville. Kansas has failed before. When they've had the bracket set up for them, they begin in Tulsa. Then they would travel to Kansas City, Missouri, which is not in Kansas, mind you. So I don't know why they say there's a home court advantage.
Wow, it's
Kansas City, Missouri, not Kansas City, Kansas.
They travel well, though. I mean, those are going to be good home court advantages.
Hold on. Missouri is next to Kansas on my map. So is Oklahoma. How about that? I think the way this Kansas team is playing, they should get to the Final Four. If they don't get to the Final Four, there's going to be some picketing outside of Bill Self's house.
But anybody else stand out to you? I mean, this is the most one seeds I can ever remember putting in the Final Four. I think the East could go any number of ways. There's so many good teams at the top, but I still think Villanova's the best of those teams. I think they're the most balanced. I think they generate points the way they did last year, where they're not 2-3 reliant. Like we were talking about, they find a way to score inside. They've got different options. I think North Carolina, the North Carolina-Kentucky game, if that lines up, could be a really good game.
The thing that bothers me about UNC is that they suffer basketball ADD from time to time. They'll go 5 minutes just having bad possession after bad possession. They're so talented they can coast on that, but once you get deep into the tournament, a couple bad possessions, that can spell the end.
So who you got?
I have Villanova, even though I'm scared that Duke gets to the Final Four. I've got West Virginia, even though I think that Gonzaga might finally get to the Final Four. I've got UCLA coming out of the South. That's kind of, even though they're a three seed, that's the one that's kind of the shocker. And then I've got Kansas making the Final Four. And if they don't get to the Final Four, I have a new apartment that Mr. Self can rent.
All right. He is Dave Preston. I'm Noah Frank. Good luck filling out your brackets. Don't forget to fill out your bracket at WTOP.com. You can search brackets and challenge us, play against us, and maybe win $1 million for the grand prize. So there you go. Thanks again.